resolve the machlekes, and the individual they called upon to resolve the machlekes was this fellow, and a tree fell on him and he died, and he went up in order to resolve the issue of Shamayim. And if I remember where it was, I would be in very good shape. But give me a second here, let me see if it actually is around here somewhere. So let me teach you guys one of the tools of the trade. How we cheat under these circumstances.
Please let us know.
By all means. If you go in to the library,
I know what it is.
The green book?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have the volume with men. He knows about how to cheat. You don't what are you doing here?
You know, I thought all you do is just make known or stuff down.
What?
Down the farm.
Yeah, but that's not as impressive as knowing where it is. That's the next step in the process. So there's this green, this set of three green volumes called Michla Ma'amorim Vapizgamim. Michla Ma'amorim Vapizgamim is where, nowadays you can use a CD-ROM, but if you don't have access to a CD-ROM, or a Shabbos or something like that, so you would take out the Michla Ma'amorim Vapizgamim and you look for the phrase which you want to find, and you find that phrase and where it's mentioned. It happens to be that all the editions of the Michla Ma'amorim Vapizgamim are all green. So it's a three-volume green set.
Doesn't it only have
Pesukim? It's everything. On the contrary, mostly not. It's not really geared for Pesukim, it's geared for Chazal. The thing is that usually it goes by the statement, not by the words. So in other words, it might not have Mesitzah Derekiah in a way which makes it easy to find, because Mesitzah Derekiah is not a phrase. And lo and behold, it does not have Mesitzah Derekiah. It doesn't have the word Mesitzah at all, because you have to remember the phrase with which it begins. The statement begins. Yeah, here it is. Okay, Bamatia Peipov Amal. So I remember that the phrase began with the word Arak, which means he fled. So I looked up Arak and found it here. So here it says that Rabbi Nachmeni said, I am the foremost posik in the world in matters of negoim, matters of tzaraat, and matters of olos, matters of tumah tzav, which concern tents. So shochu shlichu batrei. So they sent up. So they had a shaila in shamayim in the yeshiva shel Ma'ala, as to a certain shaila is in terms of. Listen to this. Kamifu gem siftet demerkirikia. There was machlekas in the Masifta Derekia. In Baharis Kodemus will say love on Tomei, and say love on Kodemus Baharis Tor. So is this Tzafek. If the white spot precedes the white hair, is it Tomei? And if the white hair precedes the white spot, is it Tor? Was it Tzafek? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar Tor. Hashem says it's Tor. V'chulu Masifta Derekia on the entire yeshiva said Tomei. Varmen, they said, Manucha, who can demonstrate where the truth is? So it says, Nochach, Rabbi Rachmani. Let's bring Rabbi Rachmani to demonstrate what the truth is, because he is this expert in these halachos. So they sent the messenger to bring him. Bring him, meaning the angel of death. Rabbi Malachamati, Malachamavis, the maker of life. The Malachamavis could not come close to him. May the law of a pasik puma, me puma, me girsum. Because he wouldn't stop learning. In any event, so the Malachamavis had him accidentally kill somebody, so he had to flee. A whole thing went on. As he was dying, finally, somehow, Rabbi Rachmani himself was caught by the Malachamavis because he stopped learning. And as he was dying, he said, Tor! Tor, Tor. Said it twice. A voice came out and said, Ashrecha! Rabbi Bar Nachmani Shaguf Chotor V'yosa Nishmas Chobetor. So as Rabbi Bar Nachmani was dying, he paskin that it was Tor, this issue. He actually paskin that Kodesh Baruch Hu's favor, luckily for Hashem. Otherwise Hashem was defeated by the Mesifta Derekia. As I was flipping the pages here, I saw another very interesting thing. The Gemara says, a page or two before, it said, anybody who teaches his friend son Torah, he merits to sit in the yeshiva on high. And the Gemara goes on to give a proof for that pasuk. So these are several sources for the issue of Masifta Derekia in yeshiva shamala. We know also that the story is told about the Gra, skipping ahead in history, that the Gra said that he was saving, I don't know if I believe this story, but it's an interesting story nonetheless. He was saving his best chiddush for saying when he went up to Shemayim after he died in the Masifta Derekia. Now, I don't think I believe the story because it's not fair to everybody else for the God to say the chiddush, to say only when he gets to Shemayim, unless he's sure that somehow or another he could send the message back down to us. But in any event, after all this is said and done, what we have here is a very interesting phenomenon. We understand that there's a yeshiva on high, and the yeshiva on high, it seems, is comprised of the neshamos of the tzaddikim of previous generations. And that the Rosh Yeshiva of this yeshiva is Hashem. But that in no way is the Rosh Yeshiva of this yeshiva a supreme authority in this yeshiva. In other words, people can argue on him, and they do. The great Talmidei Chachamim, who are in the yeshiva shamala, disagree. Not only that, Yeshiva Shamala is subordinate and is subject to the rulings of Yeshiva Shamala. In other words, some people can't get into Yeshiva Shamala, they can't be admitted unless they get a good recommendation from somebody down here below, like Moshe Rabbeinu, who wrote the recommendation for Yehuda. They could, not necessarily every opinion can be expressed in Yeshiva Shamala, right? Because we see that the opinions for Pilekish Begivah were those which were expressed by Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yonasan. Had Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yonasan not expressed those opinions, perhaps Yeshiva Shamala would have been stymied in understanding or even dictating, so to speak, what would have gone went on at the time Pilekish Begivah. Also, we see that there are ways in which you can get into Yeshiva Shamala which require a certain form of merit, such as somebody who's Melamedes Ben Chaber or Torah. And if you don't have that certain merit, you might not be able to get into Yeshiva Shamala, even though you are a very great sage yourself. Also, we see that Yeshiva Shamala not only has entrance requirements dictated by the Yeshiva Shamala, but also that once there's no guarantee if the Yeshiva Shamala paskins anything, that psak will actually have any validity in this world. Because, A, in the case of Yeshua, And Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus was machlekes in Bar Mitzvah. We didn't pack him like Rabbi Elazar ben Hurkanus, even though in the Mitzvah there were kiha. Yeshiva and I, they held like him. Because Rabbi Yeshua said, Lo b'shamayni, it's on heaven. And when they had a big machlekes between Hashem and everybody else, as this issue in Tumah Tara, they asked for Rabbi Bar Nachmani in order to actually issue a ruling on the topic. Also, as Yosef mentioned before, there is the statement made by the Chofetz Chaim, and also by before and by the Baal HaTanya team, is that one has a chiyuv to learn Kol HaTorah Kula in order to be able to get into Yeshiva Shamala. Because when you, not to get in, I shouldn't say in. In order to be able to learn about Yeshiva Shamala, because it says, according to Chofetz Chaim, that even if you forget what you learned, everything you did learn, once you get the Yeshiva Shamala, you will remember and be able to have some sort of connection to that and be able to learn, so to speak, those sugyas in Shamayim. Yeah.
Did you let
me use Arsul
for that?
Yes, of course you can use Arsul for that. Yes, if you can even forget it, then certainly can use Arsul for it.
The real question is should we be learning all our shafts until we get to end the shafts, and then start worrying about things like Musa and learning other yonim like Shabbos,
Stella? No. I'll explain why in a minute. One other thing is that I don't understand this as much as I understood everything I spoke about till now, but I understand this as soon as I understand what I'm about to tell you, which is my Rebbe. I didn't say it yet. One second. My Rebbe in many years ago in Shalbim, his name was Reb Shimon Zalazny, that's how, told the name of his Rebbe, Reb Yitzchak Zalman Meltzer, that's how, that Reb Yitzchak Zalman, who was one of the great students of the Alpha from Slabodka and Reb Chaim Brisker, once said to an American Greer, a rich American, who gave money to fund the Kollel in Eitz Chaim, which is Reb Yitzchak Zalman's yeshiva, still exists in Yerushalayim, would have an understanding when he came up to Shemayim in the Masechtas learned by the Koilo that he had funded. Meaning, he funded the learning, the Zman that they learned Baba Kama. When he got to Yeshiva Shemala, he would understand the Shurim and be able to participate in the learning of Baba Kama, and so on and so forth.
Find your learning.
Yeah, I don't understand how that works. It's a tremendous chiddush to me. Really makes no sense to me, but Rabbi Zalman was a holy kind of guy, and I don't want to tamper with anything that he said. So we have to try and understand it, obviously. Yeah?
I have a question and a follow-up question, but you can't tell the same question in person.
I'll try.
The question is as follows. When you say that they have to get recommendations from down here, does that mean that the person down here has to think about it, and the person has to actually say it or write it? How does that work?
He has to pray for it.
Okay.
Or assume it to be the case.
In that case, it says in Pesachim that there's seven things that we don't know about another person.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know, we won't. And one of those things is that you cannot tell what another person is thinking. Does that mean that in the world to come, it's not true? And then they're able to read exactly what the other person is thinking?
It's a big machlokes whether Malachim can know what you think. But in this case, it wasn't that Moshe Rabbeinu just thought it. He prayed for it.
But when you pray for it, it's not like you scream it out and everyone know about it.
That doesn't matter. If you direct your thoughts, even if they don't know what I'm thinking on a regular basis, if I project my thoughts, and then they can know what I'm thinking about.
It's a machlokes, but whether actually you think about it and it happens.
Right. That is correct. Okay, I forgot who has the time, but I just saw it recently, but I forgot. Totally forgot who's involved in this machlokes. Okay, it might be recorded on one of these shurim I gave Rosh Hashanah in the past few months, and I just forgot it. Can I speak about this?
Which?
Whether Malachim know what people are thinking. No?
Angels.
The angels know what people are thinking. In any event, so the other thing which I want to mention in this respect is that there's a famous story also about the Vilna Gaon, which the Berditchever said over. The Berditchever, of course, the great Yisrael Berditchever, was a chassid, and the grower was misnagid. So he said that when the grower passed away, they did not want to let him into the Yeshiva Shomala because he was anti-Hasidic. And he was too anti-Hasidic. A little bit of anti-Hasidic might be okay, but to be as rapidly anti-Hasidic as the Vilna Gaon was, was intolerable. So they didn't want to let him to Shemayim. So all the Sfarim which the Gra wrote came and made a path for him, so to speak, ran interference for him, in order that he should be able to get into the heavenly yeshiva and be able to learn in together with everybody else.
And Vilna Gaon was against
Hasidus? Rapidly against Hasidus. I shouldn't say rapidly, that's negative connotation. Very staunchly against Hasidus. Yes. Does somebody have their hand up?
So Bazonji was going to take a question.
Yeah.
So he was not against Hasidus because of his delving into Kabbalistic concepts then, but rather because of his the social implications, right?
It's social implications and the strange practices which introduced.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The tampering with the sin, all those kinds of things that she did.
How come, like, today, if someone wants to learn Kabbalah, they always learn, like, the Ari Zal Kabbalah? I mean, there's, like, so many different ones that I've heard of just recently, like, Evan Ezra has
one. Arizal 1.
What?
Arizal 1.
He
is Kabbalah, became the myth, definitive, normative Kabbalah.
But the fact that, I mean, like, are people still learning the other ones out there?
Yeah, people are learning them, yeah.
Learning them?
Sure.
Just not
people who have want to develop an expertise. Most of us who dabble in Kabbalah just dabble in Kabbalah.
Right.
If you want to develop real expertise in Kabbalah, you learn with Rabbi Shkodavero, Rabbi Sol Tzuk, all those other sources which most of us don't learn, since we're just dabblers. One second, I wanted to get back to the Sifter Rekiyah thing. Rabbi said, it's important, the most important thing to remember is that Hashem does not assert himself to be omniscient and omnipotent in this world, even in the divine realm. Meaning that even when you're dealing with things in Shamayim, in heaven, Hashem submits himself by his own desire and inclination, not because he has to the will of others. And that's how he created the world, that he is bound to follow directions. Since he's decided, so it's basically the same thing if you play a board game, right? See, now, let me digress here for a moment. Many of us are used to playing video games. Alex is going to get so upset for this. Many of us are used to playing video games. And in video games, there are cheat modes, right? Anybody ever played with cheat modes? Right. So, of course, if you play with cheat modes, it really defeats the entire purpose of the game. Even though the cheat modes are built in, maybe that is the purpose of the game. There's no way really of knowing, right? But theoretically, if you cheat, you're defeating the whole purpose, and you should be taking the entire geschmack out of the game, because the entire geschmack of the game is to play the game, not to beat the game. But, you know, as the great Vince Lombardi said, I think, winning isn't the most important thing, it's the only thing. So most people are into winning, not into playing the game. So in any event, but the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu designed L'Havdil Alef Alfei Hevdalot, the world is that he does play by the rules. And if you really are playing a board game or some other game and you really want to enjoy it, then you will play by the rules. You won't cheat. So one of the rules Hashem made is that this is the way it works. The Mesifta Derekia had control over me, and they can argue on me. And even more than that, the Mesifta Derekia itself is governed by us below. And that's why, for example, in the Yom Kippur service, we say, Al Das HaMakom Val Das HaKol B'Yeshiva Shamala B'Yeshiva Shamata or B'Yeshiva Shamata B'Yeshiva Shamala Og Matrim Rispali Mavayonim. It's one of the most moving moments of Yom Kippur. We say, with the consent of Hashem, with the consent of the congregation, with the consent of Yeshiva below and with the consent of Yeshiva on high, we permit davening with sinners. It's an amazing statement. We're dictating to Hashem, and we're dictating to the Yeshiva on high that one is allowed to daven with sinners. Yes, we do, because that's the way the world was created. But so, of course, it's our desire to participate in this process of Yeshiva Shamala, eventually when we get to Shamayim, but at the same time, we have more control over the process down here as of now than we will when we, Mirz Hashem, become part of the process after 120 years. And therefore, it's much more important what a person does in the here and now than what he's providing for himself to do in the world to come. And so much so that the Gemara's Gemara, which I quoted, says, you know what? Come Lamed Ben Chaber Torah, Rizorch of Yeshiva Yeshiva Shamala. What if you Yeshiva Shamala has this great entrance exam in which you figure out, to which you have to come prepared with 2,711 blocks of Talmud Bavli? Then what are you doing teaching other people Torah? Go sit down and make sure to learn as much as you possibly can. But the answer is not that way. The answer is you're not supposed to focus on that. You're supposed to focus on what is the right thing to do in this world and leave the other world to resolve the other world's issues. And that's why, in fact, you don't give precedence to mastering all Kol Torah Kula to mastering Torah in of itself. So the Chofetz Chaim's statement that one has to learn all Kol Torah Kula because they'll remind you of everything we get to Yeshiva Shamala is not meant to be an all-encompassing, immediate focus and priority. It's meant to be something which along the line you take time to do out, to take time out to do concurrently with the other things which are important for you to do at the same time. And I want to take it one step further, which is the Gemara says that obviously all this Gemara is talking about men, not about women. And the Gemara says how do women get the schus of Torah? The Gemara says women get schus of Torah by marrying Tamil Chachamim or by being making their husbands learn Torah and bringing their children to learn Torah, which is all well and nice. But that's of secondary importance for a woman. What's the primary importance for a woman is the Torah mitzvahs which she does on her own. And the same thing is true for us. In other words, Yeshiva Shamala is icing on the cake. It's something which we assume is a good place to be, but it's not the goal which one strives to attain. Perhaps if you're the Gra, it's different. Because then, of course, that is the level which all everything else has been achieved. Okay, now let's talk about how we get into the role we're going to play in Yeshiva Shamala. But the rest of us are morons and idiots. This is really not well in the front at this moment. Okay, questions? Yeah?
Also, totally irrelevant.
Okay. Yeah? No, wait. It's going to ask you a relevant question. Let's proceed with somebody else with a relevant question.
Okay.
Yeah. Fair enough? Yeah?
This is
wait. Yes?
I'm not seeing it. What is the difference? Why would a person not want to be in the Sittin Terakia?
Would a person not want to be there?
Or, alternatively, why would a person want to be in there?
A person wants to be in there because it's fun.
100%.
Right.
But what's the difference between not being in there and being in there? From what you were saying,
every person,
it's almost like you would want to get up around there, but whether they actually let you in or not, we're not interested in that. But get around. Get up there.
You know, there was a famous American comedian. His name was Groucho Marx. Anybody here ever hear of Groucho Marx?
Mm-hmm.
You never heard of Groucho Marx? No. You're kidding. Your education is severely, severely faulty. Males are not Americans here, but the Americans? Okay. What? Anyway, so Groucho Marx said he would never want to be a member of a club which accepted him. Right? So there's a corollary to that, which is, I want to be worthy of being in that club, but then I want to have the option of being able to say no to them. Right? So the thing is that it's not a question, whether I get them Sifter Rekia or not, might have to do with many different issues. But one wants to be worthy of being in the Sifter Rekia. In other words, what goes on in Olam HaEmes, we can't know. Your question is based on the legitimate assumption that the Yeshiva Shamala is the place to be. But yet we see that that's not necessarily the case, and not everybody is there, not necessarily everybody involved is involved with it. But where are they then? That's a good question. I don't know the answer. But what I would like to know is that I could be there if I can be. If I have some other destiny, because people have destinies in the Yerlam Mammoth too. Your destiny doesn't just stop when you die, you have other destinies. So if I have another destiny, fine. That's good. Okay, but I want to be worthy, potentially, of the destiny of being Shiva Shemal. Give you an example. Eliyahu Navi, right? His destiny is to go from place to place on this world. He has to attend the Brit every moment, basically every moment of the day. He has to go and hobnob with Tamil Chachamim, or Zechar Gil Eliyahu. He's a very busy man, or angel, whatever you want to define him as. But the point is that he is not sitting up there in Yeshiva Shamala. Okay, that's not his job. He's somewhere else. So, but he's worthy, certainly, of being Yeshiva Shamala. We have no doubt about that. So what? And again, going back to the women issue. There are many tzidkaniyos, women who are great, great, pious women, far more pious than any of us in this room will ever be. But they're not Yeshiva Shamala. So what do we think? They're cooking, obviously not cooking and baking, at least I don't think so, right? So therefore, there must be some other pursuits which they're doing as well. So everybody has a role in on high. I want to be prepared in case my role was supposed to be the role of being a member of this Yeshiva. Does that help at all?
A little bit.
Yeah. I wasn't out to satisfy you because I know the answers, but that's the mahalach.
What
you're
saying is we gotta prepare ourselves. We have to polish our neshamas down here so when we get up there, so we're ready to get in there. Even though we could take the cheat and just spend the 6 months and just read through the old scroll, take us 6 months and read our own.
Yeah, because you know that you're not the only requirement. It's just like you have in a Beis Shalmata. In Beis Shalmata, you have to be able to not just know a lot, but you have to be a Reish Amayim. Of course, you might have to know many languages, right? You might have to have all sorts of other areas of expertise in order to serve on a basin in this world. So to serve in a basin in the world to come also, you probably have to be a Reish Amayim and Baal Musar. Otherwise, your court is going to be corrupt.
But if you're up there in the recipient, you're busy learning Torah, you're busy doing whatever you're busy doing when you're down. If you're not in there, so maybe you're not learning, unless you think that maybe you could be basking in the Shekhinah at the same time.
There obviously are different ways of basking in the Shekhinah than learning, in the Masechta Derekiah. Right. The alternative venues.
What else?
What?
Is this the punishment for Eliyahu to walk around?
You mean they ask for each brit?
I mean, this is a little bit not in your life.
Yeah, but I don't think it's so much a punishment. It's a tikkun. In other words, it's an area which he was given a fix, so to speak. He was fixed up. I don't think it's so much a punishment. I mean, obviously, it's something which is good for him to do. See, what I said about punishment is that he's not burning in hell. That's a punishment, right? He's going from bris to bris. It's not a bad thing, right? It means it's a tikkun for something.
So everything defines to some extent.
Sorry?
It's
everything in Olam HaEmes is best called in the true world, in the world to come, is best called a tikkun. Not an onesh. Not a schar, but a tikkun.
Maybe like a work camp, like labor camp.
Let's say you were a non yeshiva or educated Baal Bas, right? And every night when you came home, you sat down on your couch and just watched television. You sat there all night zapping channels, right? So is that? You could describe that as a tikkun. How could you describe it as a tikkun? During the day, my soul got frazzled. I got annoyed, frustrated. I couldn't take it. Finally, I get home. I have to fix my soul for the next day, right? So how do I fix my soul? I think the way I fix my soul is by taking my remote control and flipping through the channels. That being probably not the way to fix this all, but I am mistaken and think that it is, right? So that all lahavdil. It's also a person can consider that to be a tikkun. So everything a person does is a tikkun in some way, shape, or form. It might turn out that this tikkun is actually a kilkul. It's actually ruining as opposed to fixing. But my perception might be that it's fixing nonetheless. So the same thing in Shammai, with Elio, right? At his, you might look at this as a punishment, but really what it is, like anything else is fixing something. It's dealing with the situation and doing the best possible thing for that situation, either from my perspective, for Hashem's perspective, or some perspective. I think it's a very NLP type idea. What?
So it seems like even there it's not so geschmack, because there somebody can always tell you it's the best for you, no way.
Where?
Somebody can tell to Eliyahu, okay, it wants to learn, but it's better for you to like walk around. And
yeah, but Eliyahu knows it's better for him. Them and somebody else telling him, right? He senses it, because it is really better. Yeah.
For people who manage to make it to the heavenly yeshiva, do you think it would be fair to say that their accomplishment in this world compared to their potential, given their abilities, was very, very close to one another, meaning that they just about, if not completely did, reach their potential?
No, I would not say that.
Why?
Because it's like their backbenches in the yeshiva shomato, their backbenches in the yeshiva shomato.
What does that mean?
What?
What does that mean?
That means if you know, in every graduating class from a college, they say there's the top rank, you know, this person graduates first in their class of 5,000.
Right.
Right? So they're also the person who graduated 5,000 in their class of 5,000, right?
Right.
So, but he was also in the class.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing in Shiva Shamala, you have the people who are the top tier, and then you have the people who are just slightly above moron status in the bottom tier.
But how do you know that the top isn't just supremely brilliant and the bottom is just above, you know, masterly brilliant? You know what I mean? I mean, how do you know that even the low of the low is greater in terms of their achievement versus their potential than anyone else?
Because I think the way I understand these things is that it's much more based on interest than it is on acumen.
Interest?
Yeah.
Okay. So you mean...
In other words, if I took somebody who was not an academic, or not scholarly, and I put him for eternity in the yeshiva shamala...
He'd go nuts.
He'd go crazy, right.
Right.
If I take somebody who is interested in being academic and scholarly, so if I don't put him in the yeshiva shamala, he'll go crazy.
So then what you're saying is that you and I, who, you know, maybe you probably will have plenty of more Torah knowledge than I do.
I'm also a moron. Well, moron, don't worry. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, morons, as you say, who have a tremendous interest in the Torah, and we really, really want to know more about the Torah. We try to do the best we can. So then when we get to the yeshiva, they say, well, good effort, but go away.
No, on the contrary. That's what you would say. I'm not saying that. I'm saying they would say to you, oh, you're really interested? Come and I will teach you.
But I thought that what you're saying is that in order for someone to get into that heavenly yeshiva...
But it's mostly based not on knowledge, but on being a good person.
How do you get that from? What is the differentiation? I don't understand.
What's the differentiation?
How do you
because
get
I'll tell you, because Chazal say... You know, I was listening... Alex gave me a recording to listen to. A certain very big, very distinguished psychotherapist. So this guy said, David Dobson is his name. So I was listening to him in the car. So he says, there's only one human emotion. What's one human emotion?
Fear.
Fear. Everything else is a response to fear.
It's fear and pleasure.
Somebody asking the question,
right?
Then
the
question
follows
up on the
list. Yeah, that's as far as I got today. I didn't get to any questions.
Somebody
can ask
the question.
So answer it.
I honestly, I have difficulty. I have understanding, but not enough to explain. I can really use you. Somebody else first.
Happiness is also a response.
How? You're afraid of when you're happy. The lack thereof?
Yeah.
What?
This is there are plenty of Jewish sources for this. Simcha comes from Yira. Rav Eliyahu says, "Ani yareiti mitoch simchasi v'samachti mitoch yirasi." Simcha, simcha is rooted in Yira. Yira Hashem is the only source of simcha. So fear is the only real source of simcha.
Okay, true simcha, but you could get excitement and happiness from other things besides your shemayim. That's definitely an illusion. You go skiing, you're happy, you're excited. You're
happy?
Excited,
you're excited because you are
afraid.
What
are you afraid?
Afraid
of what?
Well, if you ski, if you skied and it wasn't downhill, you'd be that excited. Oh boy, I'm so excited! I'm going on a flat. I'm going skiing flat.
Do you think that love, in a sense, is we're just so scared that it just feels good?
You're so scared of losing it.
Right. I'm sorry, Rabbi.
Anyway, one second. First of all, I've not finished. This is a work in progress because I just heard this today. But we also believe that this is the case. Chazal say, "Hein yiras Hashem." The Gemara Mishlei. "Hein yiras Hashem hi levad al chokhmah." "Hein behold" literally means "behold yiras Hashem." Only that is wisdom. And Chazal say, "Hein." In Greek, I don't know how it sounds like in Greek. Obviously, it doesn't sound like the word "hey," but they say the same word in Greek means one. It's only one wisdom in the world. The only wisdom which exists is Yiras Hashem, and all of Shas, all of Poskim, all of Torah, all of Mitzvahs are all to lead to that one Chachma, the Chachma of Yiras Hashem, only to lead to the wisdom of the fear of God.
That might be.
Wait a second. So that means that to get into Shammai, to the Yeshiva Shamawa, how do they score you? They don't score you in knowledge of Shas and Poskim. But only to the extent that your knowledge of Shas and Poskim adds to your Hashem. So therefore, if you learn through all of Shas, but you are a corrupt, despicable, rotten, mean individual, you ain't going nowhere.
But how can that be? Because
what do you mean, how can that be? We did it all the time.
How can that be? Because the rabbis in the yeshivas teach here on earth teach us that if one wants to increase their understanding of Torah and their Torah knowledge, they must work on themselves and make themselves better people.
Right.
That the quality of your morals and ethics is intrinsically or is proportional to your ability to understand the Torah.
That's true. But
so if someone understands the Torah, how can you say, "Oh, they're corrupt"?
You just No. You just made a leap of logic, which is not true.
Okay, please explain.
It's true that in order to become a bigger Yirei Shamayim, you should know more Torah, and more Torah makes you a bigger Yirei Shamayim. The more Torah you learn, the greater your fear of heaven will be.
Okay.
But that's only if you're motivated in that direction. In other words, if you learn Torah with no intent of acquiring any fear of heaven,
what would you do it for?
It's fun.
Simply for the intellectual stimulation.
Yeah.
Okay.
People do that. You know, people actually study
Chinese
because it's fun.
I assume so.
Wackos, right?
Either that, or they need to learn how to speak Chinese.
We smart. People learn Chinese lishma because they want to enjoy learning Chinese. Or mathematics. You know, there are actually people who enjoy mathematics.
Yeah.
I can go out of their mind. They are
simplifying the But here you are equating Torah study with secular subjects, and
that is not true. It's a terrible thing, but you can do that. I'm not advocating that. On the contrary, that would be horrible, but people do it all the time.
So then basically what you're saying is that you could be a wicked person and learn Torah
yes!
and understand Torah.
Yes!
See, now that doesn't make any sense.
What do you mean it doesn't make
it
sense?
It does not make any sense because
Why?
That is a contradiction of everything that Torah teaches.
Why is it a contradiction?
It's a contradiction because we learn that by learning Torah, one will make themselves...
No! Only if you have the right motivation.
Yeah.
So then how can one even learn Torah if they're not motivated to fix themselves?
Oh.
So
it's possible. So the Gemara comes up with this tremendous, tremendous finish. An amazing finish. Which is that it's possible. We talk Shlo Lishma, Bo Lishma. That out of learning not the right purpose, you come to learn for the right purpose.
Right.
Well, it's only possible.
There's
no guarantees.
So
is that, do you find that difficult?
I do.
Distressing?
I do.
Good.
That would
be
helpful.
Yes.
What? Why is it so strange?
I don't know why, but I'm glad that I made it feel distressed.
Why is it not? What's so difficult
about it? Ask him!
I think you set us up. Fine. Okay, so my
question. I didn't set him up. I set you up.
Mama,
did I set you up for this?
I take no offense whatsoever for anything that you say. I really appreciate your comments.
I
really
do. That's the stuff, like you lead him to certain...
I know, I led him to certain conclusion. But that is in fact the case. There are great scholars throughout Jewish history who were not good people.
Well, can you name a few?
Sure. There's one of the Gemara. His name is Acher.
Acher?
Yeah.
Acher.
Yeah.
Would you say, though, that you, the likelihood, if you're a wicked person, and you have a choice between studying Torah and not studying Torah, wouldn't you say that that person is more likely to do the tshuva by studying
not
Torah?
Not necessarily.
Oh,
Gemara says that somebody who learns Torah in order to scoff or in order to use it as a tool for their own convenience or own self-aggrandizement or advancement, would have been better if he had never been born.
Wow. Never been born.
Yeah, that means he's not on the right track at all.
But should he, but I mean, if he is, again, if he has a choice between studying Torah or not studying Torah.
He shouldn't study.
Really?
Okay.
He should first work on himself as a person.
Yeah, but isn't Torah going to make him open? So
not necessarily. That's what I'm saying.
Work on yourself and then study Torah. Work on yourself.
Same time. Yeah.
Okay.
But he has to have both goals.
Okay.
Otherwise, if you're totally off the rails, and that locomotive is just chugging along, but you're not on the rails, you ain't going nowhere, right? Yeah.
So then my follow-up question is that if it is possible for someone to be studying Torah for the wrong reasons, i.e. being a wicked person or maybe not necessarily a good person, and they're studying Torah and gaining benefit from that or whatever, then how does one ensure that one is studying Torah for the correct purpose and not for some crazy way of thinking that they are not able to see because of their outlook?
The short answer is by learning Musar.
That's
the short answer.
What would be the long answer
is that when you're learning Torah, you assess yourself on a regular basis to see where you're headed and why you're headed where you're headed. Good.
I'm going to connect that idea to my question.
That's great.
Okay. You said about the Noah and Gomer. It says in Shachin Mundal and Ibed, it says that a man cannot know what in the future is going to happen.
Right.
While we have many, many occasions in the Torah where our forefathers do go and they see the future very, very well, very clearly too.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work together?
Well, we're not prophecy, so we can't see where we're going for sure, but we can assess our trajectory. Yeah.
Well, okay.
That's what we
all
can
do. How does Nevuah fall into play with that particular of the seven things that a man cannot know? These are the seven things that a man cannot know. These are the seven things. One of those things is you cannot see what's going to happen in the future.
Right.
Well, Nevuah says, well...
Nevuah is mostly for Klal Yisrael, not for individuals. Which, what are you referring to in when you say our forefathers knew what would happen?
All over the Midrash.
Like what?
Like Abraham saw, for example, how come Yaakov crossed his hands when he said about Gideon, that one could be more greater than this one?
Yeah, but that's not him. It doesn't know about himself.
Okay, fine. And Yosef then saw him So his brothers bowed down to him in front of him and in front of everyone, and that was him.
Right.
So that's one directly to him.
But they could bow down to him not because he's a tzaddik, but because he's a jerk.
What does that have to do with me?
No, but you don't know, a person doesn't know whether they're going to be a rosh or a tzaddik.
That's true, but he can see what's going to happen.
He can see certain events which will happen in the future, perhaps, but he won't know
that
it's going to be rosh or tzaddik as a result.
The Gemara says that can't happen.
That what can't happen?
You cannot know it's going to happen.
You can't know with certainty, but you can have a reasonable expectation. Even Yosef's dreams, Yaakov didn't expect them to be. Yaakov said, who says they're going to be fulfilled? But there is a reasonable expectation which one can have. That's really what we're looking at.
What?
Yeah, but that means that he looked forward to, he hoped that it would happen. Nothing new would happen. He also said, it can't be totally true, right? Because your mother's dead. So, he looked forward. Look, it's really, you're right, it's a different shear. This is a different topic. But the nevuahs which are negative, they're not necessarily get fulfilled either. Positive ones only get fulfilled because God says, okay, that's the rule I made. But also those are for Christ, so not usually for individuals. It's rare that you have a nevuah on a specific person, because that would rob that person of his free will. That's why when Yaakov Avinu was told by Hashem that I am the God of Yitzchak, Yaakov responded and said, no, you're a pachad Yitzchak, right? You're that which my father feared, because Hashem does not link his name inextricably with the tzaddik in this world, because the tzaddik has free will and he might ultimately sin, as happened to some great tzaddikim, like Gemara says, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who for 80 years was a righteous Kohen Gadol and then became a jerk, became a rosho. So it happened. So in fact, Yaakov felt it was bad for Yitzchak to lose his free will, because you wouldn't get the reward which one gets for exercising free will. That's a long, complicated topic, though. We're not going to be able to finish this now. Okay. Next time. Yeah?
Nowadays, in Bamo, this idea that you get you do the person that you work very hard, when you get the next role, you're going to...
This is true.
Right. Fine. Now, but this idea that you mentioned, that you need to have good meters.
I have sacred mitzvahs.
What?
That you are Shammai.
Didn't you say good mitzvahs?
Did I say good mitzvahs? Did I mention mitzvahs at all tonight?
I said mitzvah.
I didn't say mitzvahs.
Sorry.
Not necessarily. No. Usually.
You answer my question.
But not necessarily.
You answer my question.
Yeah. Usually good mitzvahs and Yerusha Mayim go hand in hand. There are exceptions to the rule.
Basically, good mitzvahs are the same. You get, you get rewards for putting effort to improve yourself. If you have to be stupid, if you have to jerk to begin with, so even if you pass away a little bit of improvement, that's good.
Right. Yeah.
This is not on the topic, but it's...
By the way, I have to warn you guys, one second. This morning I got up at 8 o'clock to go to shul. Go to 8 o'clock minute. And later on, I looked at my clock and I saw it was actually 10 a.m. because I flew yesterday from Calgary to New York and I forgot to change my watch. So I thought it was 8 a.m. was actually 10 a.m. So I am, although you might not notice it, I am pretty tired right now. So I know you guys don't mind, but I mind. So I'm not going to go that much longer tonight. I'm happy to come back. Tomorrow I was told I shouldn't come back.
I'm going to meet in Miami tonight.
No, you're not.
I am.
You are tonight?
6 o'clock.
Oh, 6 in the morning. That's it? You're not coming back?
I'll come back later.
Okay, fine. Okay.
So, that's one more question.
Who here? Who's not going to be here next?
You always come back.
Who's not going to be here in Elul?
Oh, I'm going to be in Elul.
When are you coming back?
Probably in the
winter. Okay, you'll email me your questions.
I'm going back soon.
What?
I'm going back soon.
You'll email questions also. Okay. Well, 10 more minutes we'll give it.
It's just seven things which were created before the world was created.
I was away, that's why I didn't answer your email.
The Beit
HaMikdash. Elisheva Karlbach.
So one of the things the nations
was the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, I don't know if this is really a question, but probably it is the third one. I'm trying to assume it. That's the one. It looks like the Beit HaMikdash was correct. I'm assuming it was the third one.
Yeah. Could be the third one. It's also, the Beit HaNefesh HaChaim, where it says the great length. Just like there's Yeshiva Shemala and Yeshiva Shemala, there's a Beit HaMikdash Lamala. Right? That Beit HaMikdash Lamala was created, Gemara says that the Beit HaMikdash was created by the Tzaddikim. Right? Mikdash Hashem Konanu Yodech, so it was created by Hashem. Mikdash Hashem Konanu Yodecha, right? Says, Af Yodi Yodcha Shemayim, Hashem created the world with one hand, he created the Beit HaMikdash with two hands, right? So the obvious question is, what do you mean? Hashem didn't create the Beit HaMikdash. People create the Beit HaMikdash, right? No, but there's a Mikdash in Shemayim. Mikdash down here corresponds to the Mikdash on high. So that Beit HaMikdash is probably what's the point of the Mikdash.
How do we get today?
What?
How do we get today?
So that Nefesh HaChaim says, if the Mikdash down here below is built with the proper Kedusha and maintained by Klal Yisrael's Torah Mitzvot, then they converge. In the Beit HaMikdash Lamata, you already... you sense being as if you're in the Beit HaMikdash Lamala. It's only when Klal Yisrael sins that the two separate, and the Beit HaMikdash Lamala becomes a simple structure of sticks and stones, and is not as one with the Mikdash Lamala, which is what the case is today. I'll give you 10 more minutes, guys. Anybody else?
So is that the shot that the third Beit HaMikdash Lamala comes straight out of the sky?
And according to the opinion that holds, it comes straight out of the sky, yeah. There's already a spiritual Beit HaMikdash, which will then be crystallized in the physical Beit HaMikdash. Yeah.
So, getting back to this whole idea of wicked people learning Torah and using it for their own benefit, what do you think is the most damage someone can do who is a wicked person who learns Torah and really delves into this?
Horrific damage.
Can you elaborate?
Yeah, he can lead other people astray. Says Baraka that he led people out of Beit Medrash and he led them to Greek culture.
What
about JC? I don't know if JC was such a big Talmud Chacham, but Shabbat JC is another good example.
Also, you can learn to find your own.
What?
You can look at everything in a negative way. You can say, well, and then you can teach that.
And it can warp it and twist it, sure. Yeah. The early leaders of conservative Judaism, they were like that. They're
no,
very big scholars.
Sacrifices,
tremendous.
Interesting. If you're saying that is a symptom of not enough Musar.
Yes. Yeah. And not enough self-awareness and not enough Musar. Yeah.
Could you elaborate on what you were saying before about spiritual basis in Russia?
Now, we believe that the spiritual world, at least the mainstream Kabbalistic doctrine, is that the spiritual world is a macrocosm of the physical world, which is a microcosm thereof. In other words, this world is a microcosmic crystallization of the macrocosmic, cosmic, spiritual realm which exists out there. So, right? Sorry? In other words, your arm represents the spiritual concept of arm. Like it says by Hashem, Hashem has a throw and a tzui, an outstretched arm. That doesn't mean he has a physical arm. Doesn't mean he has a spiritual arm. It means there's a concept of Hashem's arm, which is a certain way in which Hashem relates to the world. Right? That's true about everything in this world. Even about sticks and stones, when they're structured in the Beit HaMikdash, they correspond to a higher realm, which is the spiritual Beit HaMikdash. In other words, those sticks and stones and the things we do in those structures evoke spirituality, which corresponds directly to those structures and those manipulations of the structures or services and ceremonies which are performed within the structure. So that spirituality on high, which is evoked by the material and physical down below, we call the Beit HaMikdash on high.
So that's gonna by building it in actuality.
If you build it, he will come. Yeah. Capital H. Yeah. Yeah.
So then, what is required, if possible, for a person grounded in the material world with a spiritual neshama, a spiritual consciousness, to be able to see the spiritual world itself?
I don't know if we're capable of doing it. In our previous generations, they were, because they had the tools. If you look, if you read R.A. Kaplan has an inner space, the second half inner space is how to become a prophet in 10 extremely hard steps. So that'll tell you how people did it.
What do you mean by the tools? Meditative
tools.
You mean they had bigger brains or something?
No, they had more focused brains. We've spoken about this. What's the average American's attention span? Right? 4 seconds, whatever it is, 7 seconds.
Uh-huh.
Right? All ADD, this is the ADD generation. So we have no capacity, we don't have control over our mind. How are we supposed to perceive the spiritual realm?
What's the first step?
What?
What's the first step?
The first step is just to work on mind control. I don't do that. I never tried to work on gaining it. But, you know, some people are very good at it. There are people, I'm sure you all know people, who can concentrate on something and not be disturbed by anything that goes on around them.
So I many times say people concentrate on money and they nothing is so bad.
They're not concentrating on money. They're not concentrating on it, right? They're worried about it. They don't focus. If they have to think intellectually about it, they wouldn't be able to. You can worry about something for hours and hours on end. That's not the same thing as focusing your mind on it.
So you mentioned before in a previous year that we're, since we do this generation, we're not so liable for it, is that right? So then this was they do the corollary, we don't get that much back for it, is that right?
No. Because since it's so hard to do mitzvahs nowadays.
What's so hard about this?
Because we don't get feel the full positive impact of the mitzvahs which we do. By the way, it's an advantage Bali Chuba have over FSB.
Doesn't stay for long.
What's your food for enough time, you lose it. Yeah, it's part of the tragedy of being from. They don't no longer feel that specialness. But, oh well.
How do you do that?
What?
How do you do that? Let's say you get to the point where you're like, okay, you know, let's get this over with.
Like marriage, the same
you type. Just keep plugging along on autopilot after a while. The you know, I was on vacation we're in Canadian Rockies for the last week and a half, so most of the days I didn't have a minion. But I was thinking about myself, you know, gee boy, I wish I was a guy. You know, I wouldn't have to get up in the morning and go diving. But then I was thinking, you know, it's taka. This is very you feel sometimes more special when you don't have a minion, and you make yourself daven anyway, right?
Usually,
because you feel, you know, this is what
you get inspired by things you don't even have yet.
Yeah, the point is that you realize that I wouldn't want to live that way. I would not want to live my life and get up in the morning and go eat breakfast and go touring. It's empty. Even though I would then have to daven, having to daven on one level, and at the same time, you can have conflicting emotions, that's not a contradiction to human being. At the same time, I feel good and proud and happy that I do daven in the morning.
But you feel bad, I feel bad whenever I'm studying Shulam, like, oh, it's taking so long to pray today. I feel bad about that.
It's not a contradiction.
How is it not a contradiction?
Because human beings are not rational.
It's partly rational.
No, it was completely irrational. It's also stunning on this tape which Alex gave me. It's that the unconscious mind is not rational, it's purposeful. In other words, you can try and analyze your unconscious mind as much as you want, you're never going to understand it because it's not understandable. You can actually, but you can see what it does. Is that what I'm saying?
And that's it. And, everyone finds that interesting, kind of like mystical.
What?
And people find that mystical.
Well, it's a mystical, spiritual, whatever you want to call it. You can also call it funny. I mean, whatever you want, but all of these things are true.
I find that to be just a cop-out. I mean, if something is purposeful, okay, you can see what it does, you can find a pattern to it. You can find that it generally wants to do this and this. And so then you can understand that. I mean, if you can predict it...
You're right. You can understand it, right? But you're not understanding reason by doing that. You're charting a pattern of how you respond.
You're using reason to understand seemingly chaotic things.
To chart them.
What?
What do weather people do? They chart weather.
Well, I call them just liars.
Fine. What do economists do? They're even worse, right? They just trace the economy. They understand what's happening. They have no clue as to why.
Right.
It's social statistics. Everything is social statistics.
That also has to do. There's just so many variables involved.
Right. Right. Exactly.
But I mean, that's not necessarily the same thing with a person. There may be a lot of variables.
That's what this guy said, David Dobson, on the tape. He said, when you hear any, he gave an example. He said a word, which some Chinese word, which nobody understood in the world, right? That what happens when I say that word, you go through all the files you have in your subconscious, your unconscious mind, right? And try and trace that. And you're going to go back with that word to something which happened when you were 3 years old. And you don't even realize that. But it's there, and you try and connect it, and it doesn't connect. And only after you run through all those associations, you come to the conclusion, you know what, I have no clue what's going on here. And in those fraction of a second, you actually go through your entire span of knowledge and awareness and experience, right? And what I say might make no sense, but it might tap into something you heard once and create a certain sensation based on something you heard when you were 3.
Right.
And you have no way of tracing that.
Okay.
So how can you analyze it?
Well, it's not necessarily to say that you can analyze it or that what? You need to analyze it, but rather...
Is that a good job?
I'm impressed.
But rather that you can understand that there are connections.
Now, Alex will tell you now how you can program yourself to respond in certain ways, but that's reprogramming. It's like pushing a reset button, right?
It's not about, but Dobson doesn't use words, understand his words, appreciate. I can appreciate the pattern, but I cannot appreciate.
Okay.
I cannot understand.
Okay,
bye-bye.
That's
enough
for tonight. We'll see you a different time.
Thank you.